Hello and welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. We're your happy hosts, Amy and Madeline, best friends who work hard and hustle harder. We believe to be happy and healthy in your work, you need to be happy and healthy in your life.
We combine health, well-being and business with a fresh perspective to share the stories of normal people with inspiring lives. From leading entrepreneurs to athletes, models and artists, together we delve deep into their journey to success to find out why health and well-being is at the core of their philosophy.
Whether you're looking for advice and guidance for leading your best life, an engaging, easy-to-digest pep talk, or a boost of healthy enthusiasm to fuel your health and wellness goals, the Healthy Hustlers podcast is your go-to for kicking ass in work and play.
Today's guest is the definition of a fierce female. Lisa Messenger is Australia's ultimate success story when she captivated her audience and quickly became a global sensation when launching her print magazine, The Collective Hub, in 2013. Lisa quickly gained a loyal community of aspiring entrepreneurs who were ready to say goodbye to the 9-to-5. Working alongside the likes of Richard Branson, Anna Wintour, and the world's biggest leaders, Lisa and her dedicated team provided their readers with inspiration, knowledge, and the tools to support them to build their brand and businesses from the ground up. This author, motivational speaker, and all-round amazing human has shown the world that it takes hustle, grit, and a hell of a lot of risk and resilience to build a global phenomenon, which she gives you all of the raw and honest details in her newest book, Risk and Resilience, which launched this month. We had the pleasure of sitting down with Lisa in her apartment in Sydney to talk about the courageous decision to break the Collective Hub, the importance of being open and vulnerable, that big is not always better, and her plans to rebuild a foolproof brand. We're excited for you to listen to this one with Lisa Messenger. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. Thank you so much for having us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no worries. Well, we actually think that we're going to move in with you because your house is incredible. And we're really grateful that you've opened your home up to us today.
Oh, it's nice to have you guys here. So thanks for making the trek.
And you can hear Benny in the background.
Benny! No more toys.
No, that's okay. This is a very real podcast, everybody. So we can have the noise. It's fine. No worries.
It is.
So let's kick off by hearing about your happy place. Where do you go to unwind and reconnect?
My happy place. So I just took you girls to one of my happy places, which is the top floor of my house at the moment. And it's filled with plants. I'm really into nature and animals. But yeah, my happy place, I guess anywhere in nature, really. The beach, I love.
So what's one thing, Lisa, that people wouldn't know about you?
Maybe that I'm a country girl. No, I think a lot of people know that. One thing people wouldn't know about me. You know, that's a tough one because as you ladies would know, I've written 6 books in the last 4.5 years, I think. So I pretty much write my life as a book. So there's little that's not out there yet. Let me think. I might have to come back to that.
That's fine. We can circle back to that one later.
People say to me sometimes, and I rarely say it, but what was I going to be when I grew up? I was going to be a horse riding instructor or a jockey or something because...
Oh, wow.
Growing up in the country, my favorite thing to do every single day after school was get on my horse and just go for a big gallop in nature for ages. And I think I just always thought I'd work with horses. So that's something I'm actually really keen to get back to.
Oh, wow. So do you think you could move a horse into this apartment?
This is the tricky thing, isn't it? I think after I grew up on a 4,500-acre property and so literally could just ride for hours and hours and jump logs in the middle of nowhere and stuff. And it's like, where do I go here? Centennial Park, where you kind of ride around in a circle with a helmet on at a walk. I don't know. It's just not kind of the same sense of freedom.
Your childhood sounds like absolute heaven. So I can't wait to delve into it with you shortly.
Yeah, it was bliss.
So you're the founder and director of The Collective Hub and author of, can we say 6?
So I have authored, this is almost embarrassing, it's 24 or 25 books.
Wow.
However, I don't think anyone read the first 17 or 18. So let's talk about my latest series, which really began in 2014 after I launched Collective Hub. And the first in that series was Daring and Disruptive. So yeah, there's six in that series. Yeah, the others, it's like a lucky dip. People can go swanning around eBay or something trying to find the Lisa Messenger previous books that no one ever read.
Going to do that. We will. Stay
tuned. There's some goodies in there.
Well, talking about your first book, I actually own your first book, and I own more than one of your new series of your books. Daring and Disruptive was probably the first book that really set my heart on fire and made me want to get out of the corporate world and working for someone else and start my own business. And at that time, I didn't start my own business for a while, but I just knew that there was something more, and it was like, okay, I think I can do this at some stage. And I have started my own business now, so I do credit a lot of that to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
No problems. But you do have your new book coming out, Risk and Resilience. Mm-hmm. It's launching this month.
Yes.
Can you take us all the way back before any of your books and give us a sneak peek into how your journey unfolded? Start from the very start as little Lisa growing up, and then talk pre-collective days and then now.
Okay, so when I was three, no, only kidding. So I did start, my career is completely illogical in a logical kind of a way, I guess, but it's often only looking back that it makes sense. It's not during it. And I think people often want to kind of pinpoint so they can go, oh, how did you become, you know, the owner of a global magazine? Unfortunately, there's no kind of, this is what I did. So left school, went overseas and was a horse riding instructor for a while. So I lived out that part of my dream. And then I had no formal qualifications. I didn't go and do a degree straight after uni. So I just accidentally kind of started to fall into jobs. So a friend of mine's mom needed someone to go into a real estate agent to answer the phone for a day for job interviews. And at the end of the day, they were like, oh, do you want the job? So I ended up working in real estate, like totally accidentally for a while. And then from there, I ended up, my bosses at a real estate agent ended up writing me this insanely good reference. I wasn't really doing much other than a glorified secretary PA at the time, but they were like, she's amazing at sales. They just loved me. So I applied for a job at the Gazebo Hotel in La Crosse, in sales. And it was funny because I think I've always been an opportunist and open to whatever's going on. And I remember I started that job on like 24 grand. It was quite a long time ago. And I was like sales coordinator. And pardon me, the sales executive, I remember saying, she was like 32 years old. And I was like, I don't know, 22 or something. And she's like, when you're my age, you might be on 28 grand like me as well. Anyway, and I was like, wow. And then 3 weeks later, she got fired and I went into the general manager and he's like, hi, what can I do for you? And I'm like, I want her job and I want 32 grand. He's like, okay. So it was kind of like I fast-tracked that, like stripped out 10 years of my career. And I think, you know, early on, I just learned to ask for what it was that I wanted and got like a little bit ballsier and ballsier. And then I ended up working in conference and event management. So I went from sort of hotels, loving the conference and event management side of working in the hotel. So then I started working for actual conference and event management companies. But within that, what I loved was the sponsorship part. So selling, you know, getting dollars to support different conferences and events. So then I started working for a business doing sponsorship for Cirque du Soleil, the Wiggles, Barry Humphries, so all sort of arts and entertainment properties. So that was kind of, I think it was just almost taking one little bit of something, like, and then moving into a different career accidentally. I didn't know about mentors. I didn't know anyone who really had a career or a job. So I just kind of bumbled along. But the great thing was then I got pretty much fired from my sponsorship job. And that was in 2001. Because I think I'd always said to my boss, I want equity in the company. And I didn't actually know what that meant, but it sounded really cool. And I think he got so sick of me because he's like, ah. Oh. And in the end, he was like, okay, go and start your own business. And you know what? It was the best thing he could have ever said. And we're still friends. So 16 and a half years later. And I went and started my own sponsorship agency on the 22nd of October 2001. And he was like, go and start in competition. I don't care. Just get out of here. And so I remember I had $4,000 to my name and I just started a sponsorship agency. And then for the first 3 years of my business, I kind of was over-servicing, undercharging, being everything to everyone, like so many business owners can relate to, and kind of almost bumbled along for the next 11 years with my own businesses. I was kind of an integrated marketing agency. I kind of did some branding, but really bumbling along really until 2012 and 2013 when I launched Collective Hub. So I think it's an important message for people that Collective is something that finally kind of worked, and it was like an 11-year overnight success of having my own businesses, and that largely was born out of frustration for many reasons. Like, I could never work out how to scale a business. I only ever had 3 staff. I was comfortable. I was earning great money, but I wasn't excited. So yeah, that's kind of anyway, we can talk about Collective now and how that came about. But yeah, my career makes no sense. And I could look back and go, God, that was a big fat waste of time. But it wasn't, because there is no way on the planet without all the prior experience and failures personally and business-wise and the life experience that I would have had the ballsiness to do what I did. And so, yeah, it all kind of lined me up perfectly to get to where I got, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I really like that you touch on all the different things that I guess created Collective Hub in the way, like all the different experiences that you have yeah. actually made you be able to step out and do the Collective Hub, which is really important, because I think when you look at your journey, you're learning something every day, if you realize it or not. And there's so many different things. Like, I even know my career path hasn't been that long yet, but in every role or job that I've had, there's something that's got me to this place today and a skill. So it's really, I like that you talk about that.
100%. And not only business wise, but also life skills. You know, like, I went through a divorce and I gave up drinking in 2004. So I haven't drunk for nearly 14 years. So I've made some conscious life choices and kind of done a lot of personal development all over the globe during that time. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's all these little things in isolation, but then packaged together on a whole, that actually make us strong enough. And certainly in my case, gave me the ability to step into what my true purpose was. So
I was just going to quickly add to that. I also love how you went into such depth with your journey and you have come out of it and said that 11 years was not a waste of time at all.
But you don't know what you don't know. Do you want me to pick up from there? Yes. So what I will say, and I know exactly where you're going with that. What's interesting is I could look back at those 11 years and kind of, and to be honest, the years before that, when I was, you know, drinking and partying and wasting my life, and go, gosh, what a waste. But actually, I so wasn't ready, and I kind of had to go through that. And sometimes it's hard. Like, I look at the last 5 years since launching Collective, and people say to me, oh, what were the highs? I'm like, well, let me tell you, before I launched Collective, I might have had one high like every 6 months or something. At Collective, it was like every 6 minutes. Like, yeah. Suddenly it was like, I could not believe every single day, like the level that we were just flying high on globally. And it's like, wow, I didn't even remotely touch the surface of that in the previous 11 years. But it was probably all just the training ground. Like, I mean, to launch something as big as Collective got, it takes so much tenacity and ballsiness and self-belief. And like, you know, like, I had to be ready for that. And so it's interesting, and you might have read in Daring and Disruptive and things I talk about, that it was 2007, I think, I registered a name, Messenger Magazines. And I bought a book in like 2009 or something that was like, how to start a magazine. Like, so all these little things, but it wasn't really conscious. It was kind of like these things I did, but then they dropped off.
Bubbling up on the inside.
Yeah. So I look back and go, oh, wow, like, that's kind of interesting. But I wasn't ready to step into something so big, and I probably would have buggered it up, you know, at some huge level if I had have started before, because to do what I've done the last 5 years just takes so much. So
the growth of your business, the Collective Hub, was obviously huge very quickly, and it was the pinnacle really of startup success stories in Australia. What did that impact have on your life and in particular your health?
Many things, and we can talk about that, and then we can talk about the lessons that I've learned from it. But yeah, and thank you for saying that. And it was interesting living such a big journey, fascinating really, because Collective stands to ignite human potential, and it's all about entrepreneurs and startups and supporting them and telling their stories and giving them voice and, you know, being inspirational and aspirational. So it was interesting that my life and the journey of Collective Hub was very much going in parallel and supporting exactly what we were, you know, teaching and giving voice to. So it was, and that's why I've kind of written so many books, is I wanted people to really understand what it takes. It takes a lot of sacrifice. Like it was extraordinary, and it still is extraordinary until it wasn't. But I guess what I would say now is bigger isn't necessarily better. So what happens is the 11 years prior to launching Collective, of having my own business, how I said I couldn't work out how to scale, and it was frustrating, and I was like, couldn't get more than three, like I just couldn't work out how to have more than three staff, or how to, you know, have more than probably, I don't know, a couple of $1 million revenue a year in turnover and things like that. And it just flatlined like that for 11 years, pretty much. And so that was a frustrating place to be. It was a very profitable business and it was comfortable, but I wanted to get uncomfortable. And it was interesting, the day I launched Collective, I knew that day I could throw 100 staff at this and it wouldn't be enough. And like, I just could see the vision so clearly, and it just came to me. It was just kind of nuts. But what happened then was the extreme growth is difficult, which is what risk and resilience is all about. So I think this is any startup journey. You start, you don't care that you're not paying yourself. You're just so damn passionate about it. You've got a small team, so everyone in the entire office knows what's going on. You're breaking rules, you're disrupting, you're forging new ways, you're learning every day, and it's juicy and fun. And you're just yelling around the office, let's do this, okay, let's do it, rah! Like crazy fun, but not too much risk at that point. And then, so for me, that kind of momentum went on for about 3 years. And it was just like, no one could touch us. It was like, just, you know, we'll invent this, we'll do this, we'll launch this. It's like, rah, amazing. And then suddenly, and it's ironic because I wrote a whole book called Money and Mindfulness about watching your data. Suddenly, I realized I'm great at being the visionary, the leader, the coming up with new ideas, the strategizing, like moving forward. I am horrible and terrible at operations and IT and HR and systems and processes and finance and legal, and I freaking hate that stuff. And what's interesting for anyone listening is whilst you start off in that real energy around creating, any business as it scales is going to become a business that has all those systems and processes and operational things. And so I started to lose myself, and what was okay about kind of not really paying myself and everything else, suddenly I was like, no, this is crap. I'm getting resentful. I'm going to work every day and not doing what I love anymore. I'm in survival mode. And it went from, you know, when you start up and you need to find $80 to pay something, which I talked about in Daring and Disruptive, and suddenly my CFO, Chief Financial Officer, was literally saying to me every day, we need another $100,000, like every day. And I was like, wow, that gets pretty demotivating when you get your face is saying, or you get out of bed and I'm just, and you go into the office and face 32 faces and you're like, okay, let's get on the phone and dial for dollars again. And it was just sinking me and it wasn't fun. So what I would say is, you know, bigger isn't better. Hiring millions of people can be grossly inefficient if you don't have the right systems and processes. I had 6 direct reports. I started hearing from each of them, oh, we need to do this. I was like, isn't the other one doing that? So we just grew too fast.
So can you just go back a little bit and tell us about, so obviously you are living the absolute high life with the Collective, and it honestly has inspired us so much.
Thank
you. We have almost every issue of the Collective magazine, and you honestly have phenomenal content in there. It was absolutely incredible.
Thank
you. I've got them all on my bookshelf, like under our TV. And since we have launched the Healthy Hustlers, I've actually gone back and started reading them. And the cool thing, which I didn't realize I did at the time, but I actually had like each one that I liked, like I'd fall on the page, each story.
So cool.
So especially the earlier issues where you really went into like how to start an Instagram page or how to do an e-commerce business. There's all these awesome stories and I'm like, wow, this is so cool.
Relevant.
Yeah, it's still so relevant.
Oh, yeah. I love that you say that because what was interesting being an editor and having never been one before, I was quite shocked by how many brands would come to us or PRs, public relations firms, and say, oh, here's the latest makeup. And every time, or, you know, and they just wanted us to push a specific product. And I was like, I couldn't give less of a crap about it. I would always say, let's just agree it's a great product. Like, that's a good starting point. And then I'd be like, I don't care about the surface level stuff. I want to know how you started, why you started, how did you fund it? What was the supply chain? You know, where, blah, blah, blah. Like, why, how? And so I always thought, hoped that the content would live on and have that longevity. And yeah, I forgot we used to do, I don't know why we stopped doing that, the how-tos, yeah, in the beginning, which I loved as well. I think maybe some of my team changed and then things, anyway.
Yeah.
So, but
we would love more content on them because it's, they're so inspiring and they really do help you with that step-by-step of how to start your business for, yeah, brand new little businesses.
Yeah,
it's,
and that's
amazing.
Thank you. That's really one of the main reasons I started was I was just frustrated as well going, hang on, I'm an entrepreneur and no one's really talking about, like, you were reading about these amazing successful people and I was like scratching my head going, but how did they get there? Like, I don't understand. And so that's really the, how the idea was as simple as that. I was like, oh, well, if there's nothing out there, I'm just going to create it. I have no idea how to do it. Okay, well, Google how to start a magazine. Like, what do I need? So, yeah.
Yeah, so I can really imagine that when you were right at the top and living the high life and everything's go, 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 fast, fast, fast.
Mm.
Did you have times where you just burn out or got close to burning out? And what tools and things did you have in your tool belt to help you to live the healthy hustle?
Well, yeah, 100%. I mean, that is my messaging always. First and foremost, before everything else, is my health. So, and I think that's a funny thing. People are like, what? Isn't your business first or isn't your family first? I'm like, no, my health is number one. Because without health, you have nothing. And, you know, when you're running any business, but particularly something of that magnitude, whereas literally, you know, the mag ended up being in 37 countries and we had, you know, a whole online presence. Sometimes we were doing up to 4 events a week. And then on top of all of that, I was flying around the country and often overseas doing speaking gigs and stuff. So I couldn't afford to not be healthy. So so certain rituals, and this goes against, like, a lot of people are like, oh, but as an entrepreneur, no 2 days are the same. You're always doing different things. And which is true, but there's certain not negotiables, like every single morning, which you can see in the sink over there still because I haven't washed it up, but like, the blender for the green smoothie. So yeah, that's like an imperative. And I'm always like, don't be too tough on yourself. If something goes downhill and you happen to eat hot chips for lunch, at least you've started okay. And then every single day I do some form of exercise. So it's, I think this is really important for people to have boundaries and put in place the not negotiables. So I would block out time in my diary, and, you know, with 32 people that all try and remove something, and I was like, no, that's when I go to the gym, or I go and do a bar class, or I'm just gonna go walk in nature. So those, you know, so sort of food and healthy eating, and then exercise is really important. But then also just downtime. Sometimes I just like hit the, you know, switch in the middle of the day and be like, I just need to go and have a massage. Sometimes if I was overtired or whatever, I'm like, just, so I had a little massage place around the corner from the office where I'd be like, quick, they had me on speed dial. I'm like, just lie down on the table and sleep for a while. And then just really simple things. Like, you can see in my house, I'm always surrounded by plants. And in the office, all my offices I've had over the last 16 and a half years, none of them ever looked like an office. It was filled with plants and natural light. And so sometimes it's as simple as just, you know, taking a few minutes out to get your secateurs out and go and chop a few things just to ground you. And I think for me, you know, jumping in and out of so many different tasks on a daily basis, sometimes it's really important just to take the time and space. They're my two biggest words this year. Just to, you know, ground yourself in whatever that is for you. And then meditating. So it's really funny because I meditate a lot, but when I met my boyfriend, and we've been together about 2 years now, I think part of the sell was, oh, you meditate. Wow, this is amazing. And then we're a few months into our relationship and he's like, I'm a bit perplexed. I never see you meditating. And I was like, uh-huh. So I think, again, my life is my life. What works for me works for me. But for me, it's about kind of going through the day fairly mindfully, and it's not necessarily sitting and chanting for hours, oh, you know, or even 20 minutes. And I've tried transcendental meditation 20 minutes twice a day and lots of different things. But for me, meditation could be going for a run, or it could be having a dance off in my living room, which I often do. Or, you know, it could be gardening for an hour. And sometimes I'll sit and listen to something and just, you know, do a guided meditation or meditation to music. But it just depends on what I feel like at the time. So I try and bring the meditation practice into my everyday.
Yeah, I can really relate to that actually, because I do it quite similar. So I meditate most nights before bed, like with just a guided app. But I actually meditate a lot on my walk. And it's through, I've learned that through using the apps, but little things where when I'm walking, instead of listening to music, I'll, you know, feel the wind on my face, and I'll feel like my legs, my feet like really touching the ground, and like how that feels in my legs. And, you know, it's just another form of meditation, and it's just being so aware in that moment of my body and how I feel. And then I've noticed that kind of translates when I eat and all of that. You just become so much more mindful, and they're all just different forms of meditation and being so aware of, you know, your actions and how your body feels at that time.
And that's it. I think it's a really important, and you've just articulated it perfectly. I think it's being just that awareness and almost being the watcher of what you're doing. Because I think particularly as life gets big, you know, at the height of Collective, and again now, being on and off planes all the time and, you know, going to Anna Wintour's office in New York or Richard Branson's private island, or I could go on with so many more, like amazing times, very heady. But it's also like, for me, I wanted to be present and actually feel that, because when you're going so quickly from one thing to another, you know, a lot of people glorify the notion of being busy. And I'm like, well, I want to far out. These things used to happen to me. Well, never actually. But, you know, as I said before, one amazing thing every 6 months, and these things were happening all day, every day. And I'm like, so I had to become and have to become now even more consciously present in the, you know, just being and that constant awareness, because I don't want it to slip me by, you know. It's just, there's so many extraordinary moments in life. So yeah,
I had a really great example of that recently. I own an events business, and I'd been working with my team for a long time on this particular event. It was a ball, and in the last couple of weeks it was so full on. It was go. It was a million tasks in a day, and not stopping, and not getting enough sleep, and probably not meditating enough either, although I did try my best. But I remember on the night when it was all happening, I could see that it was the best work I'd ever done. Everyone was having an incredible time, and it was honestly amazing. But I was so wound up that I couldn't feel it. And it, yeah, even though I could see the smiling faces, I could see everything, I couldn't take it in. And that was a big, it was a big thing for me, this, to say to myself, you can't do that anymore. You can't operate that way. You really need to make sure that you're taking in every single moment and not getting to the stage where you've got to be working so quickly, because that time just, it went by so quickly. And I probably missed a really great opportunity that night, because I know that everyone else was able to take it in and see how amazing it was. But yeah, I didn't feel it.
And you've just said something really important, like feeling, I think, because it's, you know, it's almost like you can replay something in, at a head level, you can be like, or you can intellectualize it and be like, oh yeah, this happened. We sat there and we did this amazing podcast. It was amazing. And we can tell ourselves a story. Yeah. But actually, I want to go, oh, I met these amazing women. We sat there, we drank whatever, what are we doing? Eating cheese. And we actually, this is how we felt. And you know what I mean? I think that's really important. How do you feel? And I think that's important in business, and I don't think there's enough of that. A lot of it's just heady, and it's not heart-centered. It's very much about what's next, what are we doing? It's big adrenaline and masculine energy and boom, 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 let's go. And it's like, no, let's drop down. Let's drop into our hearts a bit more. Let's actually feel it. Be present, be aware, be conscious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so important.
And how much more does that translate into all of your other relationships and facets in your life as well? Like, I know for me personally, since being more aware of that and paying more attention to being present, like my best friend said to me the other week, she's like, you're just so much more present in friendship groups, in answering the phone to me, in writing back to text messages, although I'm still getting there with the text messages. But it was so nice for me to hear that because, you know, personally I have really focused on that because I think earlier on, you know, when I was younger, I was doing lots of travel and uni and all this cool stuff, but I wasn't taking the time to pause and actually take those moments in. Instead, I was just like, living this fast-paced life, and I would get home from things and be like, oh yeah, it was so fun, it was awesome, and I'm thinking I can't even remember a lot of it because you're moving so quickly. So.
Yeah, 100%. And it's also easy for all of us to get caught up in our own ego or stories, and I notice when, you know, you're kind of living life in parallel, but friends are really important. And sometimes we're at work and we're so stuck in our own little bubble. And I remember like people would text or ring and be like, oh, do you want to come around for dinner on Friday night? And I'd almost be like, are you serious? As if I have to, you know what I mean? And they're your friend just asking you around for dinner. And I think, that awareness piece, it's really important for all of us to watch ourselves as well around, am I becoming a little bit too full of myself? Like, and just bring yourself back to that. Because at the end of the day, like, business is business. And I think in my experience, it's the little life moments in time that you kind of are the most memorable and the most precious. So it's like, yeah, hold on to those things.
So you're about to release Risk and Resilience, which we've been very lucky to be one of the first readers. This book is extremely raw and vulnerable, which we really love. Can you talk us through the changes to your business, the decisions that you've had to make, and now your new exciting focus?
Yes. So, and I got carried away a bit before and already started talking about some of that. So for those people who need to catch up, Collective grew very quickly for 5 years. And then at issue 52 of the print magazine and 5 years into the journey, I decided to break the very thing that I had started. And by that, I mean, excuse me, I decided to break the print magazine and close it. So in April 2018, so just a few months ago. And the reason that I decided to do that was everything got so kind of big and out of control and bigger isn't better and all the stuff that I mentioned earlier. But what's been amazing about that, whilst incredibly painful at the time, I think it's probably the most courageous decision I've ever made apart from starting the collective. So I kind of love that. And gosh, even 6 years ago, if you had have asked me, you know, would you start a magazine? Like, it wasn't a thing. And then I did this thing and it was huge and amazing and incredible and like the most fun and wilder and bigger than I could have ever imagined over 5 years. And so then if you had have asked me, would you break it? I'd be like, no way, you mad. But the thing is, when I started the print magazine, it broke every rule, you know, going into a highly saturated market of 5,500 magazines with no idea about what I was doing, you know, 3 staff under the age of 25, no money, no idea, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was fun because we were able to innovate every day and break rules that we didn't even know exist and create something extraordinary for entrepreneurs and startups and creatives, to kind of pave the way and inspire them and give voice to them. But 5 years down the track, you know, when I've got this very big business suddenly and I'm in survival mode every day, I'm kind of like, I've done that. I know how to do that now. So the next courageous and innovative thing I could do was to break it. Now, that's kind of painful because I had to make some people redundant and, you know, all sorts of other stuff that you read about in Risk and Resilience, and I'm not keen to ever do that again. But I do truly believe that my purpose is to ignite human potential and to live my life out loud and be a conduit to help other people to live their best life. And so I really believe, woo-woo or not, that I'm thrown challenges so that I can live it, because I'm strong and I'm very resilient. And so that then I can share that experience and that story and help other people on their own journey. So as horrible as parts of it were, I'm so grateful for it. And I could not feel more on purpose or more excited for the future. Because my boyfriend recently said to me, he goes, but you chose this. And, you know, we've been talking about conscious everything. And I said, yeah, I chose to start something, gives me shivers when I think about it, that I thought would be really big. But when you start something as a, you know, entrepreneur, startup, wherever you're at in your journey, with three staff, there's no way on the planet, you can hope and you can dream, but there's no way on the planet I would have known just how big it would get. And so I chose to start something with three people. I didn't choose to suddenly have $3 million in salaries a year and all this other stuff. And you don't know that until you're there. So now I consciously choose that that's actually not the life I want. I don't want to have that level of responsibility and operational, the operational side of things and the systems and processes. I want to create and keep moving forward and be a leader and all those sorts of things. So I think it's really important for people to kind of get where they sit on that spectrum. It's not to say I won't do something very big again. However, I will have a very, very strong 2IC who is operationally and data driven from day one. But what I'm playing with at the moment is that, as I said before, in 16 and a half years, there's not a day when I haven't had a physical office or at least three staff. So I'm kind of, I love to push things to the limits. And because we've done so many stories, we've done over 6,000 stories in Collective Online and Print Mag in the last 5 years. And so many of the things that people were fascinated about were being a digital nomad or working from anywhere or, you know, that kind of thing. So I thought, well, I'm going to put this to the test. So let's just see if I can work from home, me and my laptop, and decentralize my entire team. And so that's what I'm playing with at the moment. My editor, Amy, has been working from Kiama, so 2 hours south of Sydney, for the last 2.5 years. And she's probably my most productive staff member and had the most incredible output based on KPIs, one of which was deliver me a magazine every month. And I was like, well, if Ames and I can have such a great relationship, why can't I have people working from anywhere building out the business? And so that's what I'm really focusing on now. And as we said before we started this podcast, and I was telling you, it's like when you have 32 people sitting there in the same office, everyone's involved in everything. And it can become grossly inefficient if you don't kind of put some parameters around that. Whereas now, I ironically probably almost have more projects going on and more exciting things in the works than I did when I was at the height of Collective. But because I've got so many different people working on them, I only let them know when they need to know. And so it's highly efficient. Everyone has their own budgets, own KPIs. It's a project by project, specialists, not generalists. And so that's kind of where I'm going. So I'm working on some very, very big, very, very exciting things at the moment. And my boyfriend said, oh, just take a year off, and that lasted about 2 weeks. I'm a hustler. I love business, you know, and freaking love it. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to stay down for long. And I think what I would say is this: we can't control what comes at us in life, but we can control how we react to it. So whilst I made some, you know, big silly mistakes at the height of Collective, I didn't know that until I made them. And so now I'm out the other side and I won't make them again.
Well, that is so exciting, and we are so excited to see where it all goes, and we have full faith, knowing you, that it will be just as amazing as ever. So yeah, good luck with it all.
Thank you. Oh, and we can tell your listeners pretty much first that one of the things is that I will be bringing back the print magazine on the 29th of November, but we'll only be doing a couple of issues a year. But you know, it's my baby and I love it, so that will be one of many things that we'll be producing.
Oh, we can't wait.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I took out of what you just said was that you had the courage to to break your baby and to break something that was, you know, high flying and amazing, but now you can rebuild it and now it can be foolproof.
Oh, that's it. I mean, yeah, that just gave me shivers as well. Because I think, you know, there can be so many things, identity wrapped up in something that's like sexy and glamorous or, you know, there's so many things that I could have used as an excuse to keep trying to bumble along. But it's actually far more courageous, I think, to break something, because especially then it was for me very public and everything else. So it's like, we'll just own it, tell everyone exactly why and how, which I've done in Risk and Resilience, and then rebuild. But yeah, if I kept bumbling along, it's like same old, I'm not really inventing, I'm not really moving forward, I'm not innovating. So yeah, but now that I've cut the whole cost base out and I can build up again, so.
Well, from an outsider looking in, I feel if you had have just kept bumbling along, you would have burnt out and you wouldn't have had this amazing opportunity to stop and now rebuild it into something incredible. And I know as an avid listener and follower of your journey, I'm so grateful that you did that, because now we get to experience the collective mag again, and it will go on. You know, your journey will go on forevermore. And not that wouldn't have anyway, but I think the fact that you had the courage to get back straight into the magazine and just do it differently is awesome.
Yeah, and you're right, I would have burnt out completely. But now, and it's funny, working from, there is an irony to like having your own business, because you still become, pardon me, accountable and beholden to your staff. It was like, I always felt like I had to be at the office at like 8 o'clock or 8:30, and I couldn't leave before anyone else. And the other day I went to a movie at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I hate being inside on a beautiful day, but I was like, I'm going just because I can.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I think though you would have almost seen the passion. You're such a passionate person, and that comes through so much in the Collective Hub, especially in your editor's notes. Like, aww. I would always read them. So I feel like, yeah, as a reader, you might have seen that passion had died a little bit just because you are such a passionate person. So
yeah.
It's really exciting what you're doing, and yeah, we just wish you all the best. It's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's the thing. When you're not fully in tune with your own best life, you can't really help other people. Or indeed, when you're not healthy, you can't. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That has to be number one.
Absolutely. So now, I guess, shifting gears a little bit, we would love to start talking about your inner critic, I guess that little mean girl or that inner voice that we all have. How do you tame her when she kind of starts firing?
My biggest thing is about, so every day I ask myself, why am I doing what I do? What's my purpose? Very simple. And then I kind of go, Collective stands to ignite human potential. Lisa Messenger, third party, is an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs, living my life out loud, showing that anything's possible. So they're the two things. So whenever I start going, I'm not good enough, who am I to do, whatever, whatever, I take it outside of me and I go, why am I here? I'm here to serve, and I'm here to, you know, live my life out loud, showing that anything's possible. So get off your ass and do it. So that works for me. What I would say to other people is really question, why are you doing what you do? And if you can make it about something that's bigger than you, then it shifts that ego essentially from yourself to serving someone else. That can be anything. I mean, we're sitting here, I've got a glass in front of me. You might be a glass producer, but if it's just about producing the glass and there's no meaning or feeling behind it, then sooner or later you're going to be like, ugh, this is boring, like, ugh, tedious. Yeah. But if you're like, I produce this because I see the looks on people's faces when they drink out of the glass, or the family sitting around a table and sharing wine, whatever it happens to be, if it's bigger and it's about the feeling about what you're trying to create, then you go, oh, I need to keep going, you know?
I really like that. Thank you. I was thinking when you were saying that, I remember reading about it in a book, and I can't remember whose it was, but it was about, you know, your purpose and why you get up every day and why you do it. And he was talking about a guy who had a steel company, and it was really passionate about talking about his steel company.
Yeah,
and it was really unlayering that guy and why he was so passionate about steel, and it's really stuck in my mind as to really figuring out exactly why you do what you do, because it is, that's how you tame your critic. It's how you get up every morning and be passionate and be driven and be alive, really, I guess. So
that's it.
Yeah.
It's the passion. And I love that you, I don't know what that book is. I'm not sure.
I'll remember it.
But I love that as well. I know that I watch also my inner judgment. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll meet someone and I might be like, whoa, I would never do that job. But then they start talking about it and they have so much passion and drive, and I just fall in love with them on the spot. And that's the thing. I don't care what industry it is or what you've chosen to do. If you're passionate about it and you love it, it just shines out of people. Whereas other people, you're like, wow, that would be so glamorous. And they're like pent up and narcissistic and horrible. So,
well, I think if you really take a step back and think about all the things that you're grateful for, you can find passion in anything, really. But
I talk about attitude of gratitude, yes, and flipping things, you know. So it's often, yeah, it's just about flipping your mindset. And, you know, it's like gamification. You gamify things. So you can look at things and be like, oh, that, like you see these people in the world, they're really grumpy or they're always insanely optimistic. And it's like, possibly the same kind of situation happens to both types of people, but the person who wants to have a downer in life, they'll be like, oh, that happened, that was so bad, oh my god, how am I, you know, victim, whereas the other person might be like, wow, that happened, I can learn it, oh, I can't wait to tell my friends about this crazy story. Or you just find a way to flip it. And I do that by almost writing books, I guess. So when something really, really bad happens, rather than me going, this is hell, and risk and resilience, there are several, like when I spent 1.3 million of my own money, I never saw it again. But then I go, wow, that's going to make really good content for a book.
Turning it into positive.
You have to. Yes, you do. Or you'd be permanently having a pity party on the floor, because there's a lot that can get us down. But you've just got to find a way. Not everyone writes books, but find a way to reframe it and be like, because then you sort of have fun with it. You're like, God, that was so bad, but wow, can't wait to tell people and laugh about it. You know what I mean? Like, you just have to. It's a much better way to live, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Maddie and I work together, and often life can become quite crazy, and you can easily get into the mindset of, oh my goodness, I'm so busy, I have to do this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And then we kind of have a little chat and we stop and we take it back and we're like, but look at the cool stuff that we're doing, and
yeah,
we're so grateful for our jobs and everything that we're achieving. So I think, as you said, all you need to do is stop and flip it and think of all the things that you're grateful for to change your mindset.
And that's something I had to do through that tough time with Collective. I mean, I was hemorrhaging money and I had to let staff go and things. And then I was like, which actually purposefully made myself write into Risk and Resilience, the things that we actually achieved during that period, because it would have been really easy to be like, oh my God, this is just hell every day. But I was like, whoa, even though this is happening, we're still, what matters the most, our community, we're still creating amazing stuff, we're still moving forward. You know, it doesn't really matter if I'm having a personal meltdown in the background, as long as I can find a way to get through this and do the best by our community and my team, then it doesn't matter, you know. So always try and default to finding the good in everything, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard, like really freaking hard, but yeah.
I think that's really beautiful advice. So,
yeah.
And I know we've touched a little bit on, obviously, the magazine's coming back, which we are so ridiculously excited about. But knowing you, there's obviously some very big grand plans in the pipeline. Is there anything you can give us a little sneak peek into?
I'm really trying to, if we go back to practicing mindfulness and presence, I'm really trying to just be at the moment and do the time and space thing, and actually, rather than be busy, actually open myself to stuff. Talking about what we were saying before, like often I'll get asked to speak somewhere, I'll literally arrive 5 minutes before, jump on stage, leave, like shake hands, kiss babies, leave. And like, not, you know, I do what I do, but I'm like, I don't sit there and watch the other speakers. In the past, I've always been so busy, and now I'm like, I'm actually loving attending conferences and being more present and being there for longer and listening and soaking up and educating myself and listening to more podcasts. And I think a really important lesson for people is, when you allow yourself time and space, then the flow naturally occurs. And I'm just loving watching the opportunities unfold at the moment, and there are a lot, and there probably almost won't be a week that goes by over the next 6 months when I won't be launching something new, but in a very sustainable, very careful, very meticulous, KPI data-driven way. But the nice thing about it is throughout those 6,000 or so interviews that we did with Collective, there were so many extraordinary people that I met, but often we'd sort of say, oh, let's do something together, and it'd be like, I didn't interview 6,000, I interviewed a handful, but you'd kind of be like, oh, here's our hour together, and then, you know, you'd run off and get busy again. So some of those relationships I'm kind of revisiting and starting to create some other amazing stuff with people, but yeah, I haven't given too much away. And because also I'm quite detached from outcome, like I think at the moment I'm just happy creating some nice products, and I think there'll be something pretty big down the track for entrepreneurs. I can't help myself, but I want to get ahead. I don't, you know, I look at print, I look at online, I look at everywhere sort of media and different things are going, and I kind of want to really educate myself about what's 10 steps ahead, not just what's 3 steps ahead. So that's where I'm at.
That's awesome. And as you said, big is not always better.
Oh, no. Every time, my boyfriend is an amazing entrepreneur. He's starting a very big business at the moment, and he's just put out something saying he's hiring 20 people in 20 days. And I'm like, oh, please, no. Haven't you learned from me? What are you doing? I'll leave that to everyone else for a while.
That's awesome. Now, we just have a few questions before we wrap up. What does success mean to you?
Freedom and choice.
Love it. What are your daily rituals or non-negotiables to ensure that you're always being the best version of yourself?
Time and space, but starting the day with a green smoothie, having some time locked out in my diary for exercise, and, you know, meditation and journaling and things like that. And just, yeah, making sure for a while that I'm number one, I guess, and not letting anyone override that, keeping my boundaries intact.
And what would be the greatest lesson you've learned so far?
Bigger isn't better.
Oh, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us and welcoming us into your beautiful home. I said to you when I walked in that I wasn't moving in because I had a suitcase with me, but I actually think I'm going to Lisa's heaven. So yeah, thank you so much, and we just wish you all the best, and we're so excited to keep following along with your new journey.
And you, I think, you know, we all keep lifting each other higher. There's enough room for everyone, and I love what you're doing. It's amazing. So whatever I can do to support as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so you can keep up to date with our new episodes each week. For a dose of weekly happy, healthy news, you can subscribe to our newsletter via our website at thehealthyhustlers.com. Until next week, make sure that you're investing in yourself to keep the hustle healthy.